This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. This is the second part of a three-part conversation about Nicor, a backer board product that's made from recycled carpet. My guest for this conversation is Steve Steele, the chairman of Nicor. But it's just difficult to get people to change sometimes the products that they use.
It's a slow process. So we've spent a lot of time, particularly this past year, on R&D and third-party testing and field testing and that kind of thing. We have roof shingles that have been on reordered several times by a country club that we did in near Auburn, Alabama. Have about, I think, 4 years' experience with that now. Another unique quality of our products is that they can be colored all the way through, and some can be made literally unbreakable. We drop anvils on them as a test, but they can be painted, which is a significant thing. So we don't do cedar shakes now, but we have done prototypes of cedar shakes that will hold up in any weather. It could be painted and repainted. And particularly in areas like Georgia, where there's a problem with mold and discoloration on things like cedar shakes that begins almost on the day of installation, that can be eliminated. And as I said, if the wife or the husband, whatever, decides he wants to change the color of the house, they're not wedded to whatever the initial cedar shake color and aging would cause, but they could repaint it.
So obviously, being nylon, this will not rot. It won't. What will the mildew then?
An attractive thing, particularly in near homes, it's not toxic for children, as an example. But pets are not attracted to it. Animals, termites, etc., are not attracted to it. So it's very attractive in the horse and agricultural environments as well.
I see. Do you need any special tools? Can you saw use a regular saw?
You can use just standard equipment. As I said earlier, you can score and snap this, but there are several products, as I mentioned earlier, but we concentrate on the backer board. You can score and snap it. It is a little easier to do with a saw, but you can do it in place as you're putting a bathroom in because of the lack of dust and material that it sets off. There are just very few crumbs that result from any kind of sawing or breaking.
Now, in the floor covering business, is this used primarily in the ceramic arena?
Yes, it is. It can be used for other applications, granite, marble, as I said earlier, stucco applications. There are companies that have experimented with heating it and heating the ceramic or other products on top of that. So there are other applications that will grow from it, but the primary usage is for ceramic tiles.
How do you distribute the product now?
Right now we're in negotiations with two very large distribution entities, and we hope near the first of the year to announce nationwide distribution, and then sometime next year potentially international distribution.
So that's going to change things pretty dramatically.
Yeah. The dilemma with folks like us, and when I say folks like us, I mean people that make things out of recycled content, although when it comes to nylon from recycled carpet, in any major way, I think we're unique. There are others that make carpet mats and carpet related products, but ours branch out into all kinds of construction and other areas. And to the best of my knowledge, other than some erosion control, I don't believe that there's anybody actively producing any kind of similar products right now. But the dilemma has been in any kind of recycled situation, whether it be Coke bottles or other scraps or whatever, has been that most have been confined to some kind of city or regional area where they get their collection, because the cost of transporting the initial raw materials, collecting them and transporting them, dictates your ability and your cost to produce a product economically. And we think we have devised some updates, even our own technology, which allow us to branch out. But primarily, we think that the place to be for us is Georgia, and to distribute out of Georgia.
I see. Talk about the collection end of the business. That's got to be, I think you used the word headache a little bit earlier.
Well, we've been very fortunate so far in that we have had a lot of support from the large mills. And many of the mills have their own programs to encourage collection and use of recycled materials and the cycle of recycling, if you will. So we have benefited from relationships and situations that percolate with all the, I shouldn't say all, but with a number of the large mills and with their recycling programs. Also, we have dealt with those. We have not done our own post-consumer collection at this point, but we have benefited from others that have, both regionally and we think as a resource. We know who it is that we can go to that have networks and have significant experience in the collection. But historically, what happens, particularly in the post-consumer side of things, is, as I mentioned earlier, the placement of containers in building sites and or the use of your own or someone else's trucks to collect on a set route. And some folks have facilities that are large enough that they entertain others bringing it to them. The post-consumer side can be more costly to deal with because of the smaller collection from different, multiple number of spots as opposed to large amounts from one spot. Also, the purity of that is often a headache to deal with, and so you have to run it through several processes to get it pure enough for most uses as they exist today.
Get the dirt out of it and so on.
Again. Right. We don't have as great a problem with that because our technologies clean it up kind of in the process as we go.
I see. I suspect, though, the collection side of this thing is good, is only going to get better as more and more, there are more and more collectors out there, I suspect.
Well, systematically, it will get better, but again, you get to the regional aspects of it because it's difficult to move weight of any kind around this country, and particularly when cost of gas, et cetera, are up. It becomes a significant thing, even if you had a resource that was four or five states away for the collection of very large amounts of carpet. Getting it from here to Minnesota, as an example, would cost approximately $2,100 per truckload. And so you get regionalized by the availability of your product, meaning the raw material.
I see. So you use a good deal of this, and if the distribution that you talked about earlier goes through, then I suspect you'll be needing a whole lot more post-consumer.
Exactly. It's of course, some of this is pie in the sky and projection at this point, but we do believe that the solution to the recycling dilemma, if you will, in the carpet area has been a significant amount of energy has been put into it by Shaw, by Mohawk, particularly by companies like Interface and Millikan, and all of those continue their efforts to aid, either do their own programs internally or aid folks like us to have sources and that kind of thing. But the post-consumer side of it is maturing now, and there are networks of collectors around the country that are becoming more and more active, particularly because of the need that Shaw has for its facility. So, for the six. So, we see a growing need and a very substantial need. We probably took in excess of 20 million pounds last year, and we would see us doubling or tripling that next year if all goes according to plan.
Has the fact that Shaw has opened the Evergreen plant earlier this year, has that helped you in essence because of, I suspect, the new collection organizations?
I think, it was one of those situations where everybody, I think, stood back and watched because the industry went through this when Evergreen was operational before, of many people getting excited about collection and interest percolating in that, and then when it didn't continue, there was maybe some hesitation, some cautiousness on the part of some folks. So when an entity as large as Shaw with their resources gets involved in a project like that, I think there's more confidence, and when the Mohawks and others have gotten their programs up and running and have done what they've done, then I think there is more confidence in the recollection community, which tends to be small, local entities, and only a handful of them have been active in recent years. So I think that the Shaw effort helps particularly with the timetable and generating what I will call an immediate interest in collecting product. And I think we will be the beneficiary because we can use the 6.6 that you mentioned earlier, which kind of comes in at the same time that the 6 the Shaw needs. And there are other things, polypropylene, that others use. So we can serve as a conduit as well and as a resource for the 6.6 to go or to pass on the polypropylene to others that actively use that. We hope to be an integral part of that whole network.
I guess by virtue of being in Georgia, you're in the Atlanta area, and the Evergreen plant being in Georgia as well, in Augusta, I suppose that's some kind of an advantage for you.
Well, we don't actively work on the Evergreen project right now. We're awfully glad that they, being Shaw, have set up such a successful effort to collect, and they I hear very, very high purity rates in what they do collect. So what that has done is that has educated and trained recyclers to be much more productive on one hand, and also adhere to the greater level of purity that was not being met years ago. 5 or 6 years ago, the purity of collected product was nowhere near what it is, because primarily of the high standards set by the large mills now and the projects that they're involved in.
I gotcha. Now, you're associated with the CARE organization. We met at the CARE annual conference in Charleston. Talk about that involvement. Has that been a big benefit for you?
Well, in many ways, it's been an eye-opening experience. I have the honor of serving on the board of directors, and through that have been able to meet regularly with persons that have great experience in both carpeting and the floor covering arenas, as well as who have dedicated several years to getting the CARE organization off the ground and promoting the whole concept of particularly post-consumer collection of recycled carpet. And there has been great energy from that organization, and particularly certain individuals that are both part of the administrative team of that organization, and then others from the mills and from government, to meet certain mandates and objectives to create a stronger collection force, if you will, in this country. And there have been challenges, but I think overall it's a very sincere and thought-out effort, and it provides an opportunity to do an awful lot of good, because otherwise the alternative is that all of this material ends up in landfills and does not biodegrade. I shouldn't say all of it, because the individual mills do have separate programs for some collection and reuse and recycling. But a great majority of that material would be here 100 years from now in a landfill if we were not taking efforts right now.
This is going to conclude the second part of a three-part conversation about Nicor, a backer board product made from recycled carpet. Steve Steele is with us from Nicor. He's the chairman. We'll be airing the third and final part of this conversation tomorrow, and you're listening to Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. This is the third and final part of a conversation about a product called Nicor. It's a backer board product. It's used primarily in the ceramic arena, and it's made from recycled carpet. My guest for this conversation is Steve Steele. He's the chairman of Nicor.